Hello, everyone, and welcome to Coffee with Innovate Finance, our podcast series where we speak with industry leaders on financial innovation and fintech. Our podcasts are available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts. So I'm Janine Hurt, CEO at Innovate Finance, and I'm so excited to be joined today by Cindy Young, Managing Director Europe at Ripple, the leading provider of crypto solutions for businesses whose mission is to build breakthrough crypto solutions for a world without economic borders. Cindy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, Janine.
Can you tell us a bit more about Ripple and the original idea behind it?
Yeah, happy to. So essentially, the premise of Ripple is starts with the idea that today you can essentially stream video from a space station, but you still cannot send money seamlessly across the other world. And in some cases, it's still even cheaper to jump on a plane, get a bunch of cash and take it yourself, which is very unfortunate. And we want to change that. So for that, we start essentially, our vision is to enable the world to move value in a seamless way, in the way, just the same way as information moves today. Just like you send an email, you should be able to move value in a similar fashion and know that it's going to be there at a minimal cost or not. And when we mean value, we are talking about this could be digital forms of money, currencies, but it could also be other tokenized assets, real world assets, digital assets represented in digital formats. So it could be a number of different things. And with that, you've kind of shared, our mission essentially is to build those breakthrough crypto solutions for a world without economic borders. It's very kind of core to our mission is to enable that seamless movement and to bring in a lot of the sort of unbanked populations as well into the current financial system, which they're unfortunately excluded today. To achieve that, we've been focused on the cross-border payment solution, cross-border payments markets, and the $130 trillion sort of problem and challenges market today. Some payments are very slow, expensive, still error prone. We worked on that with the ethos of, how can we use this great technology to solve some of the challenges, some of these kind of real world problems around cross-border payments, and always with the perspective of how can we help the current financial system, financial institutions evolve and drive this positive change. We've kind of believed more that the change comes from within as opposed to just completely breaking things and building something entirely different. And with that, over the last 10 years, we've built out our solution RippleNet, which is the payments network with millions of transactions, transferring billions of dollars today. And eventually, we've been building that out to go beyond payments to a platform with more crypto-native services on top.
And so what are some of these solutions that you reference, and who are your key customers and your key partners within the industry?
I would say at the moment, we have four main lines of solutions. So I'll start with the cross-border payments, crypto liquidity, the central bank, digital currency platform, and more recently with our acquisition of Meteco, custody has come into the play. And in terms of the cross-border payments, which is where we started, which I explained a bit as well, it's essentially helping businesses move money across the world instantly in a transparent, cost-effective, and efficient way. And the Ripple Net, the payments network that we've started today, for example, has just over 20 million transactions worth $30 billion with really hundreds of customers around the world, over six continents, paying out in over 70 countries. We service primarily financial institutions, but we've also seen more recently take up from corporates that have either similar challenges with their treasury flows or similar challenges in terms of how they pay suppliers. And kind of on top of that, our crypto-powered cross-border payment solution, which is called on-demand liquidity, essentially uses XRP, which is the digital asset that we very purposefully use as a bridge to move money across the world. And we have built that essentially into our tech stack to enable the transactions to settle instantly across borders. So that's I guess what we've been kind of focused on for the last, you know, a good part of the 10 years, and I would say bread and butter sort of our core. But more recently, that leads me to our second line. We've also brought in, for example, crypto liquidity to help businesses source digital assets in the best way, in the most cost efficient, optimal way, expecting that more and more businesses will need to interact with the crypto world. So kind of playing that bridge. The third one I mentioned is the central bank digital currencies. Again, kind of in the last kind of 2 years-ish, that has come to build that up. This is an end-to-end solution for central bank, commercial banks to issue and manage central bank digital currencies or stable coins, or really any other real-world assets, tokenizing real-world assets. I may have live pilots at the moment with, you know, Palau, Bhutan, Montenegro, et cetera, which I will be hopefully able to share more. And the last one I mentioned is custody, which is kind of last leg we've been building out with Netmeteco, as we've recently acquired this Swiss-based technology custody technology company who are already working with a good portion of, you know, tier one banks around the world.
It's a fantastic breadth of solutions there. And can you tell us a bit more about what you see differentiates Ripple from other players in the market?
It goes back all the way back to, you know, our roots and kind of where I mentioned that we have started with thinking about what problems does this technology solve, cross-border payments being one, not the only one, but we've been pretty unique, I would say, in the market to really take this problem and really go at it for the last few years in a very focused fashion, and really focusing on that utility and solving a problem, not just, you know, creating this shiny solution. The second piece I would say is the view around partnering with traditional financial institutions, traditional the ecosystem, right, whether it be regulators, governments, existing kind of banks, etc. And while today maybe it doesn't sort of sound as groundbreaking, you know, back for even 4 or 5 years ago, that was for the crypto world quite a groundbreaking approach. But we've seen that has positioned us well as kind of the more traditional world has started embracing blockchain and crypto in the last few years. We've started seeing they come to us because they know that we have the expertise both in the crypto space, but also the expectations of the kind of traditional space around safety, security, compliance, etc. And we've always taken that longer term view, right? This is not an easy problem for sure. And that's why, you know, it does take time. But we've always believed that movement of value without the central counterpart is really the baseline use case for this kind of technology to take off. So we really thought that, you know, it's really important to bring that to life. And we've built that payments network as a kind of initially a messaging layer, sort of direct messaging layer, and introduced crypto later as the world was kind of a bit more open to embracing the benefits of that. And the last leg of that is the fact that, you know, we do leverage XRP, which is a specific digital asset that is native on the XRP ledger, which is separate from Ripple company. It's a public decentralized blockchain, but it was built for payments. It is very specific decisions built into it to enable this real-time settlement scalability, etc., greenness of it as well. And obviously we're very unique in that we're leveraging this digital asset for the cross-border payments. We hope to be able to do, you know, a lot more with it, integrate a lot more closely with our solutions and the XRP ledger functionality.
Right. And Sandy, Ripple, of course, is a global company and you lead the European arm. What are the opportunities that you're seeing on the market today on an international basis? And also, what does the UK potentially need to do to realize its ambitions to become a global crypto hub?
Yeah, big question. So the first part, I guess, of the question in terms of the opportunities, I think there are still three overarching big long-term trends that continue to prevail, right? Despite, you know, for those who are closer to the crypto space, crypto winter and the collapses of major exchanges, FTX, stablecoins, Terra Luna, you know, collapsing, kind of now the stablecoin market cap is going down. So despite all of these, I would say, kind of noise and, you know, what makes maybe some very interesting media articles, these three trends, you know, the long-term trends we're continuing to see. And these are, one is the institutional adoption. I think one of the best ways to articulate one of the conferences I was at, you know, speaking to a lot of very, you know, traditional large, you know, banks. I mean, somebody said, you know what, we don't invest in this with a two-day horizon. We invest in this with years of horizon, which is true. And I think that is very telling. And again, despite that, you know, all of that kind of negative news, if you look at still some of the very big names continue to lean in, right? PayPal just issued their own, you know, stable coin. Big asset manager and big names like BlackRock filing for spot Bitcoin ETFs. Just recently, again, Credit Agricole in France secured the license for crypto services. And many, many more of those. It's really more for, you know, which one do you choose to see is really the question. And I think what I'm kind of seeing in that space is this feedback loop is starting to really pick up as there's more institutional interest, more and more mature and institutional grade products are coming onto the market, which obviously allows them to take up more. And the more institutions coming in, like larger institutions, they bring in new liquidity venues that essentially expand the breadth and depth of the crypto markets, which then make them more relevant and able for, you know, players like us, we're able to bring the benefits of the space more to our customers. And it just gets this kind of flywheel effect. So we're starting to see that pick up more as well. I would say the second trend is continuing and will, I think, again, continue is tokenization and therefore leading to more greater need for custody. And, you know, that's, I guess, obvious that we believe in that and that we acquired Metaco, which is obviously tapping into this space. Digital representation of assets, real world assets, native digital assets, they're only going to grow. There is, you know, some estimates that the 10% of world GDP will be tokenized by 2030. We've done some surveys at Ripple recently, which goes to show kind of just almost like three quarters of the over 1,000 sort of finance leaders said they would expect that tokenization will be influential in their business as a way of driving innovation in the next 3 years, essentially. And this range from, you know, the finances, we range from finance, manufacturing, media, entertainment. It was a wide range. And then the third one, I would say the big third trend is the expansion of the payments use case, right? The use of blockchain crypto in the payments. Again, we've proven some of the benefits from a cross-border perspective. Again, there's some newer sort of stable coin based solutions coming to the market as well, which is a sign that, you know, there is also benefits there. And, you know, for Ripple as well, we see a lot more opportunities to grow sort of beyond the financial institutions. And I said there's an earlier sort of take up in the space, but we expect that to continue to grow and also expand more in the different use cases as well. So those are the trends and opportunities we see. In terms of for the UK, I think I honestly feel I'm in a very fortunate, if you know, I feel incredibly fortunate to be in the UK in the space. Again, being a US obviously based headquartered company, despite, you know, being very global from early days. You know, we're in the UK since 2016 or so. Really fortunate. The reason I'm saying it is UK always has a really long history of being an amazing hub for finance and technology and fintech. Therefore, from a talent perspective, from a regulatory frameworks perspective, and even from a, you know, time zone of where everything kind of comes together. And I'm really encouraged to see the movements happening in the UK around to really kind of deliver on this promise to be a crypto hub. I mean, first of all, the leadership to state that there's a, you know, understanding that this is the future of kind of finance, probably other industries as well, but starting with finance. And it is important to have a clear stance and a leadership to continue to drive kind of UK's position globally. So really appreciate, I think, the commitment and the leadership, but also the number of movements that have happened, right, with the, you know, Financial Services and Markets Bill, We were really pleased to see also the Treasury Select Committee's report around the crypto regulation, which really laid out the benefits of the kind of more real applications of the technology. And I think there's that real drive to bring a clear regulatory framework. I think we just need to complete the work that has been underway in a kind of timely fashion, not lose the momentum. And we're in a really good path, I think, to be, you know, one of the leading hubs in the space. For sure, there is a global race, right, happening. We see that.
And I mean, building on the sense of the global race, but also just looking at digital currency more broadly, you mentioned inclusion quite a bit at the beginning of this conversation. I mean, can you tell us how you see digital currency really empowering businesses and consumers?
Yeah, I'm super, super excited about the premise because, again, for me, it just makes sense in the sense that how we live and, you know, socialize and entertain and, you know, work, all of that has been changing dramatically. Like even, you know, just within my lifetime, everything is more digitally native, right? Around, you know, everybody wants things at the click of their fingers. 24/7, 365, and the financial infrastructure was built even before the internet, and it's really kind of struggling, I think, to keep pace with how we live. And essentially, you know, what is payments? It's just an enabler to the thing we need to get to. So I'm really excited about that. I think, you know, I mentioned that, you know, there's over a billion people unbanked around the world. And now, you know, through digital wallets, they have an opportunity to access finance and have more control over their earnings. But beyond that, there are, you know, lots of really interesting use cases around the whole idea of content creators, which, you know, today maybe get a fraction, if anything, of their, you know, the benefits of their creations, again, through the ability to have this more seamless payments, on demand, instantly, fractional payments. All of that, you know, has the potential to give users more opportunity, content creators more opportunity to really react the benefits, the value they're creating. But like anything, right, technology obviously can be used for, you know, good and bad. And I think kind of probably nuclear energy is one of the best examples of that. You know, it could be electricity and fuel and really stimulate a massive, you know, growth for the economy, or it could be much, unfortunately, misery and destruction. So, you know, maybe that's a bit too dramatic, but that's why I think it's important to have appropriate regulations and guardrails in place so that, you know, it is used for innovation and for good of people, and, you know, bad actors are kept out.
Yeah. So Sandy, let's change tack and look at the growth of Ripple, because something we talk a lot about at Innovate Finance is how do we support companies as they scale and expand? And we know Ripple is a global company with a team of, I think, around 900 people. So what were some of the key challenges during your scaling journey? And maybe any advice for those listening in and those founders listening in?
Yeah, I have to admit, it's incredibly fun. The scaling up is incredibly fun, energizing, but it is an incredibly challenging journey for sure. I think in my experience, I would probably summarize in two main things, right? So one is the differences in regulatory clarity, because that really, especially in this space, really defines where we can, you know, there might be a lot of demand, but where we can tap into demand. And the second point, which is true for many, many businesses I've been in, remaining relevant locally while growing globally. So I think on the first one, on the regulatory clarity, right? I mean, that's been one of our biggest challenges, again, primarily in the US. And again, I feel very fortunate to be in the UK and with Europe as well, with the markets and crypto assets legislation. I think it's a really good momentum, and now it's coming, and anyways coming into force to really have this regulatory clarity. And we see it in some other jurisdictions, for example, in Asia as well. And that's essentially where our business has grown most, right? Like it's not just a coincidence. Last year, 2020, was our best year in terms of growth, payments network pickup, etc., despite the SEC case. but obviously a lot of that growth has happened outside the US. And we've really doubled down kind of in terms of our hiring outside the US for that reason. And then the second point, which is actually, you know, we could probably just have a podcast just around the point around staying relevant locally. But I think here the important thing is, again, as a kind of US headquartered company, albeit being very global from early days, with 90% of our customers outside the US, it's so critical to be close to customers, not only understanding their needs and having that feedback loop in terms of how we develop products, et cetera, but also making sure our decision making and servicing is close to customers in every way. And that for us started with one, making sure that we have the right local team in place, that meaning, you know, the right size and right sort of expertise on the ground to realize our, you know, business demand and ambitions. So I was brought in just over 2 years ago as the Europe MD. It was the first kind of regional leadership role. The company, first time the company has kind of established this kind of role. Just about 3 years ago. And during kind of my time, we've really kind of built up the team in line with our demand, right? So, you know, we've more than doubled the team in the region now, people opened up, launched Ireland, Dublin for our presence, again, post-Brexit, obviously needing more foothold there. And we've also built out kind of the seniority and the cross-functional representation to really make it a fully fledged regional hub and really worked very hard on kind of the feedback loop around the teams on the ground and, you know, anywhere else, headquarters or else servicing. Because at the end of the day, you know, it is obviously, you know, teamwork. I think the third element of that, I would say, is in terms of staying local, is being really embedded in the ecosystem where you are locally. So in the UK, we really take our responsibilities, you know, as a kind of leader in the crypto blockchain space seriously, and working with likes of, you know, Innovate Finance, obviously is super important to be engaged in the payments, fintech, crypto ecosystem. You know, we work with the payments associations and several others as well. To make sure that, you know, not only we have a voice, but we also hear what are some of the other kind of issues and challenges, and, you know, very actively engage also on the policy front with the industry bodies and regulators. But we do other things. That's not the only one, right? We have a company-wide university blockchain research initiative, which is a partnership with universities to fund research and student activities, et cetera. So that there's more awareness and education around the benefits of, you know, blockchain. Again, here in the UK, we have an education program that started with University College London, and it's now UK Centre for Blockchain Technologies. We've kind of continuing that partnership in the program and expanding that actually outside London as well, which is super exciting. And then again, Ripple Impact is our company-wide sort of impact initiative to make sure we have, you know, positive contribution to the communities around us. We really, you know, again, taking that very seriously. And over the last 2 years, we've launched a 2-year partnership with the Great Ormond Street Hospital charity to help them build a new cancer treatment center for, you know, obviously children and their families. And we have, you know, over the course of the 2 years, a number of different engagements initiatives with them to continue to support this, including the London Marathon, where we were there together with them as well. But I think, you know, there could be a list of a million other things like this, but I think it's really important to look at it holistically and engage in with the existing ecosystem in every way possible. And yeah, never forgetting that, like the mindset of, how can we also lift the communities together and create better outcomes together?
I think, Sandy, that's some fantastic guidance there, actually, in terms of growing company. I'm going to turn the question now on to you personally, because as a female leader in fintech, you really are an inspiration for so many other women in this space. I'd love to hear if you have any advice for those inspiring young females that are looking to make an impact through fintech today from your own personal journey.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I think absolutely. I think in this space, right? So I'm you know, again, in crypto blockchain, sitting in between finance and technology, and you know, sometimes I feel like we've got almost the worst of sometimes both, in terms of being obviously very kind of historically it's kind of white male dominated industries. But the reality is, I think we've made massive strides, to be honest, to improve diversity, both not only gender, but, you know, including other ethnic backgrounds. And we have, I mean, I certainly have a lot more role models, you know, compared to when I talked to, for example, you know, my mom or my mother-in-law when they were working. And it was a very, very different world back then. So I feel very fortunate, and I try to make the most of these opportunities. But in terms of, I would say, kind of advice is, for me, self-awareness is super, super important. It is really important. I mean, somebody again once gave me an advice that, you know, taking time, you know, allocating time within your day to do whatever it takes, you know, there's some exercises, you can do mentors, you know, very different ways that you could do it. But to really think about what you want, where you shine, where you want to develop, and how you're going to get those experiences is super important. And you should take that, consider that as part of your job, not, oh, I'm, you know, not doing my job. No, it is part of your job. It is part of your career. And it is all part of the package. So I think that's really important. Being bold is another one that I've learned, and sometimes you get, you know, pushback. But the reality is, it doesn't matter if you're not bold. You if you know what you want through self-awareness, you got to go and get it, and not worry too much about kind of naysayers. Take the feedback, evaluate, and you know, it could be useful for you, right? To change and improve maybe your approach or your skills or whatever it may be. But I think it's important, you know, not let that define how you think about yourself, and having that solid grounding. And I think in terms of, you know, once you have grounded, you're kind of going at it, as you move forward, for me, one of the big breakthroughs, I've been just saying, like, having this approach of thinking step by step, right? You don't need a 10-year groundbreaking plan. I don't know anyone, to be honest, who said, I'm going to be this in 10 years and made that. I'm sure there are, but just have a met. It's more important to have more directionally where you want to go, I think, and just think increments, because again, only, you know, you can take one step at a time. And I think it also kind of gives you more confidence as you take that step and you realize you can do it, or you build your skills and confidence. It's easier to take the next step as opposed to just thinking too far ahead. And the last one I would leave, which is definitely not the least important, probably the most important, but very much looked overlooked sometimes, is look after yourself. Mental health, burnout is definitely a thing, and it's so easy to get lost in these hectic schedules and, you know, crazy social media and all of that. But again, I've learned through many years of, you know, trial and error, to schedule time off just for myself. And it gets harder as we become a parents, which I'm a parent of two little boys. You have to make it like work and schedule time for yourself. Obviously, you know, it's one thing to do that proactively. If you have the choice, if you're looking at for your, you know, next opportunity, next employment, review the policies the company has, right? I'm incredibly fortunate Ripple has rest and recuperation days since COVID, but they haven't stopped because they realized what a great value it is. And even personally, I almost underappreciated. I thought, oh, I can take a day off. Why do I need the entire company to day off? But it is very different when everybody slows down and you don't have a massive inbox to come back to on the Monday. So I think it's just being very conscious about, you know, how you're going to do it, whether on your own or by the way you choose the companies you work for.
I love it. And those are words to live by, Cindy. Some really good advice. Well, finally, to close our discussion out, what is next for Ripple? Any exciting news that you'd like to share with us?
Lots of exciting things coming on. I think, so first and foremost, I think we're super excited about our annual conference. Swell is coming up in November, 7th and 8th of November this year in Dubai. Last year, we were in London. That is an opportunity for our customers, partners, our broader network partners kind of to come together and to really talk about, again, the real world use cases, successes, failures, what have you, and really connect and engage. So it's two days of great programming. And I think in line with that, I think for us, the, you know, continue to expand the payments offering across use cases, across geographies, continue to evolve our products and solutions, sort of it all comes to that. As part of this kind of our payments network and offering, you know, hoping that a bit later in the year we'll be able to announce a few more partnerships and our latest partner, which we've announced end of last year, which is MFS, a fintech unicorn out of Africa. We have a great partnership with them. We are, you know, continuing to work very closely, and hopefully we'll be able to announce a few more things with them as well. And then all the kind of other lines I mentioned, again, it's relatively early days for us. For example, Liquidity Hub, we would like to expand to clients across the UK and Europe that is subject to receiving our crypto asset authorizations and payment licenses in those jurisdictions. So that's really exciting. We're working through growing our central bank digital currency offering. I mentioned a few initial pilots, but there's probably dozens of other conversations going on. So hoping to be able to announce a few more shortly. And then the last one is I referenced our recent acquisition, Metaco, in the crypto custody business. That's still kind of very, very fresh. You know, we're working through the synergies and how we bring that to life. And a lot of that team is also based out of Europe as well, kind of in my world. So really excited to see what more we're going to be able to achieve together.
Amazing. So lots to look forward to then in the coming months.
Absolutely.
Right. Sandy, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you everyone for listening. And please do keep an eye out for upcoming episodes. All our podcasts are also available on our website at innovatefinance.com for further insights on the future of fintech and financial innovation. Thank you so much again to our guest today, Sandy Young, Managing Director, Europe at Ripple. And thanks everyone for listening. Join us next time for Coffee with Innovate Finance, and bye for now.